אנשי הביטקוין, פודקאסט איגוד הביטקוין הישראלי, תכף אנחנו מחליפים לאנגלית, כי היום אנחנו מארחים אורח סופר סופר מיוחד, אנחנו מארחים את The Regional Head of Mina at Bybit, Derek Dye. Hello, Derek.
Hello, Nir.
It's so great to have you here. It's like, you know, yesterday you had this big screening of the match, the football match. How was it?
Was fantastic. I mean, first of all, it was a great match. Actually, we didn't know who is playing who when we first picked up the date, but I think we're just fortunate enough. It's a big game, you know, Brazil versus Japan. And we got amazing signups from the community. I had a really great time together with all the community members celebrating this excitement of the World Cup. So, I really wish that we could do something more like this so that I feel closer to the community.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking, when we're looking at the World Cup, we see a lot of crypto companies over there. So it's like we're headed mainstream. It seems like, you know, we're talking about, you know, ETFs and tokenization and stable coins and everything. But then again, when you see the whole thing with the, you know, the World Cup and the advertisement and everything, it's like, it seems that we're actually, if we hadn't noticed, we are mainstream, aren't we?
We are actually, we're becoming part of it. So mm-hmm. even though there's still a long way to go, but I do see that the converge between Web 2 and Web 3. So no one could actually neglect Web 3 right now. So yeah, we're on it.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, about Bybit.
For me personally, I actually joined Bybit in this January. And before that, I had more than 10-year experience studying and working in the United States. I got two of my masters in US. I did my PhD study in consumer psychology at Rotman School of Management, University of Toronto, but I quit halfway through. That was really surprising, actually, because, well, a little bit about my family background. Both of my parents are teachers mm-hmm. back in China. And, you know, born in such a family, I was supposed to be a professor after, you know, getting my PhD. You know, being a professor at a B school and have a kind of like a very smooth and predefined life. But I was the kind of guy who doesn't really want my life to be predetermined. I really want to do something what I think is worth doing. So at that time, I feel kind of disappointed with the academia. I feel like, you know, what we're studying, what we're researching on does not really have the lifetime value to the industry. Mm-hmm. So that's why I decided to quit halfway through. And it shocked everyone, including my parents. They were so angry with me. So I went back to New York, joined this startup company, which is working on international mergers and acquisitions. And also we do like traditional finance and art investment. So I stayed in New York for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I left New York, unfortunately, due to COVID. I moved to Dubai and I started to work in crypto and Web3. So that's how I built up my career, starting from small exchanges. Then later on, I was with BitGet for 1 year. And I was with BitGet actually last year. So this January, I just joined Bybit as regional head of MENA.
And what led you to think that crypto was the future? You know, you're from a very traditional, I guess, you know, customer. If you're talking about your area of research, it's like, you know, customer and the things that they do. It's like, it's something that is kind of different from the whole Bitcoin crypto arena that we're talking about. What dragged you into this particular rabbit hole?
First of all, what I've been studying and what I studied mm-hmm. before actually is highly related with what we're doing right now.
Okay.
And it's very helpful to my daily life. I can share later mm-hmm. because it's all about consumer psychology, psychological behavior, mm-hmm. behavioral economics, what factors impact people's decision making, risk taking, risk seeking, how digital asset could possibly influence people's investment behaviors. Mm-hmm. So all these topics are related with consumer psychology. And secondly, the reason why I was fascinated by crypto and Web3 is because during COVID, everything is so slow. You can't really do anything at that time. So I was just asking myself, if I cannot work in traditional industry anymore, which could be the next path? Is it anything that is 24/7? Like I can do it like even without meeting people? Bam. I realized crypto is the right one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, by the end of 2020 and the early 2021, I decided to join a crypto exchange. Even though I had no experience working for exchange before, I have some basic knowledge about Bitcoin, but not really much in terms of the operations or business of a crypto exchange. But I decided to move on to this industry without, you know, zero experience. So I do believe that this is the very moment that I realize, I think thanks to COVID, mm-hmm. that this is the future.
So how does it look? How does it, how can you tell, you know, people tend to think that crypto exchanges are, you know, they only see the user interface. Can you take us into the daily lives at Bybit? How does it look from the inside?
Well, I have to say it's a lot of work. So, working at a crypto exchange, especially a crypto top one like Bybit, is not an easy work.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm managing MENA. It's a huge region with over 20 plus countries. So I would say there are a lot of things that we have to monitor and we have to work on, and a lot of issues we have to solve every day, literally every second. So, you know, the interface you see is actually the work by our product team and tech team. So there's a lot of like, you know, upgrades, updates, maintenance, and also a lot of innovations. That's what we're doing. You know, you probably have seen a lot of Bybit users have seen, you know, a lot of innovative products
mm-hmm.
launched by Bybit periodically. Yeah, that's all the hard work by these backend team members. And then for us, regions, we're kind of like at the front end. So we are facing users, you know, we're facing all kinds of users, non-VIPs and VIPs, institutions. We have to deal with marketing, PR. We have to worry about our brand image, brand exposure, brand reputation. Operationally, we have to make sure that, you know, we can grow health in a healthy way while maintaining our, you know, good ROI.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of factors that we need to consider when running the crypto exchange, especially in the bear market now. You know, a lot of exchanges are actually laying off employees. But for us, we haven't done any layoff.
How does the bear market affect you?
Several things. First of all, we can see a huge decline in user activity. And mm-hmm. that's happening for everyone in the industry, yeah. not only exchanges, but also a lot of like project public chain. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Reduced user activity means reduced revenue. So we have to be really cautious when balancing between growth and revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we need to be really careful in terms, you know, what we do, what kind of budget we allocate to what part. So we need to be more strategic. And secondly, bear market also means, you know, a lot of users might lose faith.
Mm-hmm.
on Bitcoin and even on this industry. So that means we have to do a lot of work in terms not only education, but also how to, you know, make sure that users still have faith and interest in this industry so that we don't lose them forever.
You know, in Israel, we say that the bear market is, I don't know if it's a thing that you only say in Israel, but, you know, we say that in bear market, it's the time to build. It's a stressful time, but it's time to build. So what are you building these days that you see, that you perceive as the future? Or
exactly. That's actually the point I want to make. The third point is I see it as also a good opportunity for us to build.
Hmm.
And what we've been building so far, first of all, fiat infrastructure. So if you check out Bybit, not only Bybit MENA, but all the regions that we have licensed, we're building this fiat infrastructure. So fiat on and off ramp is way much easier for the users.
But
bank transfer. Yes.
Bank transfer.
So basically, users can use their local bank account to transfer Bybit immediately and get the fiat deposit in the account. And then, you know, the fiat money could be converted to crypto immediately with our trading pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So we just make this fiat infrastructure accessible and make it as easy as possible so that even, you know, non-crypto users could use it easily. That's the first thing. Secondly, we are also trying to build this payment and Bybit card system. So basically, now a lot of users can use Bybit card in their daily life, buy coffee.
Can I issue a Bybit card here from Israel?
It's not issued by Israel entity. So it's Bybit card is actually issued in another country or other countries where we're regulated, and the card got shipped to Israel.
Oh, so I, as an Israeli, can issue a Bybit card, but it won't
be
an Israeli.
You cannot issue, but...
I cannot. Okay,
cannot.
But
you can apply
places,
for it.
I can apply, but in places that it's that Bybit is regulated, you can issue a card, and then you can just use your credit card, as we see. I know that we've seen a lot of, I don't know if a lot of, but we have seen some apps that does that thing, in which you have like your crypto wallet, and then on the other side you have your credit card. When do you think we in Israel would be able to issue a credit card, you know, as smoothly as those other apps do, and just use our crypto in our daily lives?
First of all, you need to get a local license. Mm-hmm. That's a must.
Yeah.
So make sure that you are regulated. Secondly, I think this kind of card issuing also needs a partnership,
mm-hmm.
and agreement with a local bank.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have both of the conditions to be met to be able to issue an Israel local credit card.
Yeah,
crypto card.
We just actually saw that the Bank of Israel was applying for making this kind of agreement with Visa in order to get the data of how many Israelis are using those crypto cards. I guess that we'll see a lot of coming from there. So you're the head of MENA, and you know, if we're looking geography wise, you know, Israel is a part of MENA, but you know, we as Israelis, we sometimes tend to perceive ourselves as you know, more connected to the European side of the world. You know, we play soccer, football with the European leagues and basketball, and we're, you know, it's like it's something that is more related. How do you perceive? Do you see, you know, from somebody like somebody from the outside, do you see Israelis as different from the region, crypto-wise, or more similar to the United States or to Europe, or how do you perceive it?
Very good question. First of all, in terms of football, yeah, I had an interesting conversation with some of the community members yesterday. They complained to me, like, oh, Israel football haven't made the World Cup for like more than 60 years, right?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, you know, Chinese men's football team is even... a bigger joke. We haven't made it for 24 years. We only made it once. But the thing is, the Israel team has to play against these European big teams, right? You know, France,
Germany,
Netherlands. I mean, all these big ones. The chances are really slim.
And listen, those are
and
Jewish
it's
people.
Not fair.
They're thin.
It's not fair, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then, on the other hand, geographically, Israel is part of MENA.
Mm-hmm.
So you are included with these Arabic countries, right? So
we're pretty similar, actually. We just perceive ourselves as not a part of them.
I do see a lot of similarities between Israel and other Arabic countries.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I know that there's a huge population of Arabic people
of course.
Living in Israel. So I cannot deny that.
Of course.
But from the user's behavior, I would say, and also I observed that Israel users are quite mature and professional in terms of the way that they trade or they invest in crypto. Several factors. First of all, I do see like Israel users, they're very tech savvy.
Mm-hmm.
So we see some of them actually using all kinds of like technology tools to help them better in trading. We see a lot of like these algo traders, quant traders, high frequency traders that are highly relying on all kinds of like tools, and some of tools even are developed by themselves, which is really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I also see a lot of Israel users. They are very sophisticated in terms of portfolio management. So they know how to allocate their asset into different products to maintain a good APY and return.
Mm-hmm.
And third, I see that there are also some of the Israel users who are kind of not that rational, big gamblers, similar as some other countries. So I would say, you know, from my observation, it's a mix of all types of users.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot really say, oh, Israel users are more like European ones or the US ones or Arabic ones. I would say it's very hybrid.
So you were talking before about the whole fiat currency delivery system. And, you know, we in Israel encounter the unbanking issue. Now, this is an issue that I think all around the world, we have been encountering it. We saw it in the United States. The Senate Banking Committee had a discussion about it, I guess, a year ago. And we see this thing, you know, go back and forth. How do you perceive the banking issue, or maybe the unbanking? How do you perceive the on-ramp and off-ramping situation in the world and in Israel especially?
Good question. So let me take UAE as an example.
Yeah.
Because we got the ESCA license and also the VAR license. So right after we got the ESCA license, we actually launched these fiat on and off ramp service.
Oh, just for our listeners, those are the licenses that allows you to trade crypto.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then users can actually easily deposit fiat,
mm-hmm.
that's dirhams, from their bank account to us.
Yeah.
And also make withdrawals. And, you know, for the deposit, we didn't even charge any fee.
Mm-hmm.
And for the withdrawal, it's a very little amount of fee.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we're doing in UAE. And also in other countries, we're doing it in a similar way. So I think this is a kind of like the infrastructure, which is fundamental. If we really want to grow in this industry, want to expand and want to increase adoption rate of crypto, we have to go through this so that even non-crypto users can easily deposit money into crypto exchanges. And speaking of Israel, I did have the conversation with someone from different banks,
mm-hmm.
Including the digital bank, the mm-hmm. first digital bank in Israel, the 1-0. And I also learned that the third largest bank in Israel.
Yeah, Mizrahi Tfakhot, of course.
Yes, actually recognized Bybit.
Yeah.
They listed Bybit as one of the 10 exchanges that they will kind of give us green light. So once there's any fund from Bybit transferred to that bank account, they will not recognize it. But I also know that in Israel, a lot of banks are very kind of tough. They don't accept deposits and withdrawals related with crypto exchanges. Also, even if you know some of them says that they allow this kind of deposit withdrawal, they normally ask all kinds of questions and users have to provide all kinds of materials. So it's kind of like a not pleasant experience for users. I did see the friction here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, there's a lot of work actually to bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think local regulators need some clear guidance and also very strict rules in terms what is allowed, what is not. So I think there's still some gap between the regulators and the local banks for sure. Secondly, I think it also has something to do with the AML system.
Mm-hmm.
And how money transfers are monitored in this country. Especially that, you know, I know like Israel has one of the best infrastructure in terms of, you know, cybersecurity and also AML systems for crypto. But in terms of traditional finance, traditional bank transfers, is there anything that is lagging behind that forced the banks to have such kind of behaviors? And the third part, the tax system. So I did realize that it also has a lot to do with the taxation, which is tedious, and it's sometimes it's not user friendly. So I also had a discussion with one of the key person that is closely tied to the local regulators. And we do agree that there are some innovations and revolution that need to be done in terms of refinement of the taxation system here. So, I mean, overall, I think fiat on and off ramp is a must if the local regulators really want to make crypto a booming industry. And but it cannot be just be done in one day. So I would see joint efforts from different parties to make it happen. And Bybit is more than willing to be involved in this process, whether, you know, supporting in regulatory framework discussions or even we can, you know, initiate the sandbox and we can try to help build up a better system so that, you know, both the fiat and the crypto transfers could be better monitored in terms of AML. So, I mean, Bybit is always willing to support in this kind of initiative.
I think they'll be most welcome. We're in the crypto companies forum. We actually are in this endeavor to get the friction off the Israeli system, because we see that huge market and we see the huge industry that that there is in Israel. And I think one of the biggest concerns of the banks, and feel free to skip this question, but I think one of the issues is their concerns regarding to AML and AML anti-money laundering and anti-terror financing, which is a major issue in Israel. And I think that Bybit stands out as a safe place. Can you please tell us a little bit more about what do you do in order to get those bad actors out of the system?
I would say we have different layers to make sure that we are quite safe. Mm-hmm. And that's also a reason a lot of users complain about us, saying, hey, the Bybit AML is so strict that their funds got restricted. They have to provide all kinds of like documentations, supporting materials to release the funds. First of all, we have the underlying product and technology set up. And secondly, we have really a very sound AML system working with regulators. Make sure that all the transactions are monitored. And if there's anything suspicious, it's flagged. And that's why, you know, we've got many users, you know, got this request from Bybit providing all the necessary documents. And third, I think overall, Bybit works with regulators and local governments closely to make sure that we don't have anything related with terror financing or any AML anti-money laundry activities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of like the core in our company culture. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's look at the broader picture a little bit. So we're at this podcast, the name of the podcast is The Bitcoin People and Sheha Bitcoins. And sometimes we perceive Bitcoin as a different, you know, the different kind of asset when we're talking about crypto. How do you perceive it? How do you perceive Bitcoin? How do you perceive other tokens as Bybit?
Well, for us, Bybit is a new financial platform mm-hmm. that offers all kinds of, you know, services. So for us, Bitcoin and other, we say altcoins,
mm-hmm.
they're just, you know, the different types of assets that are available on our platform. So from my perspective, there's not any difference
mm-hmm.
because we don't really differentiate them. But from the user's perspective, a lot of people know crypto because of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin has, you know, we've seen ups and downs of the Bitcoin price in different cycles. And some of people view them as like safe haven. Some of them view Bitcoin as a risk asset.
It is a weird safe haven if you're dropping from 125 to 59, as we're
reporting. There was a lot of time.
Sometimes it was a safe haven, yeah?
Yes. And now, you know, a lot of people say, Bitcoin is a scam. You know, it dropped.
The Bitcoin obituaries, of course, our favorite part. If you mm-hmm. want to, if you want to say last words about Bitcoin, this is the place. This is actually the place. I'm joking.
So I would say, you know, for me personally, I'm a Bitcoin holder, mm-hmm. long-term holder.
Yeah, that's what your shirt says, actually.
Yes.
It says HODL.
HODL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I truly believe the value of Bitcoin. And also, the reason why we see, ups and downs in Bitcoin mm-hmm. is it's a natural trend for any financial asset to be the mainstream asset. I think we have to go through this process. So, and talking about the current market situation, we do see that Bitcoin price is disappointing to many of our users. But think about it. Bitcoin is now competing with AI stocks. And I think majority of the liquidity actually moved from Bitcoin to the stock market just because of the AI.
Stock market, SpaceX with the crazy valuation.
Exactly.
You know, I guess it's more than the... I think that SpaceX is valued more than the European GDP, which is kind of weird, I guess. They don't have, you know, millions and millions of people working daily.
No. So
is that a huge bubble?
I do have this belief. And I see some interesting comparison between the perceived AI bubble versus dot-com bubble.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar pattern in terms of the charts. So, but personally, I'm worried about AI, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Now everyone is talking about AI, how AI could replace human beings in work. But think of it, if the majority of the works are done by AI one day, and we still produce more goods, that means we're going to have a huge supply, mm-hmm. right? What are we going to do with this supply? Because for those who got replaced by AI, they don't have any more income.
Yeah.
That means reduced income. And we don't have these people to consume these excessive supplies. What's going to happen to our economy in terms of circulation? That's going to be a huge problem.
I guess it's like, you know, it's, I think if we're talking macroeconomics, it's more of an issue of getting it, you know, when we're looking at the old, really, you know, the economy 101, the macro 101 models, which, you know, the Butters and the Cannon, do you have those examples? So it's like a technology shift is shifting that same thing. It's when you have a technology shift, you can produce more of each product. And you had those kind of technology changes back in the day when the sewing machines got in, when the locomotives got, when the first locomotives started. So you had major changes across the history. Now, yep. People tend to perceive it as something that, you know, is something new, but we just didn't see an exponential change in our days. We just saw linear change. And now, I guess with AI, we're seeing that leapfrog. You know, on the 70s, we were thinking about the stars. You know, David Bowie sang about, is there life on Mars? We haven't been to Mars yet. You know, people haven't been to Mars yet. And, you know, we've been dreaming about larger cell phones or something like that. But now, this is really an exponential change. And I guess this is how people felt when they went out to burn the sewing machine in the Netherlands, the Lodits.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, with the concern of possible AI bubbles, I think we will bring back some of the liquidity gradually.
Mm-hmm.
And we just need to wait for the next big thing for the Bitcoin price to pick up. You know, now Bitcoin halving is just a cliche now. Everyone knows about it, right?
Yeah.
And also the first pass of the Clarity Act in the United States, the primary
If it'll happen.
Well, hopefully, but not sure whether it's going to happen in August. But I think ultimately it will happen. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of how long it's going to be approved. And now the market just needs one big thing to boom it.
So did you see a change when the ETFs were approved? Do you see a change in the ways that people trade or?
Well, from the retail side, mm-hmm. it doesn't have too much change. But from the institutional side, there's a huge change. You will see a lot of funds from like different institutions like BlackRock. They're buying huge amount of ETFs when it first launched. So it does help actually the booming of the market back to last year. But in the meanwhile, you know, you also see them dumping a lot on ETF in this year, which accelerates the price decrease of Bitcoin.
But it does affect the fluctuation, right? It does affect, you know, does give more liquidity and more tradability, you know, yep. in comparing to last cycles when you had those big jumps and those big crashes because you just didn't have a proper way to buy and sell.
Exactly. But from the retail side, I mean, I would say it's a good thing, actually. We mm-hmm. need the institution adoptions for sure. And we need these big players to be in the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bitcoin community is really, you know, it's a passionate, it's a vocal community here in Israel. If you know, if you're sitting now here in Ben Yehuda Street and talking about crypto, what is the message that you would like to convey to the Israeli crypto community?
Well, I would say never lose faith. That's very important. Mm-hmm. That's why even, you know, at this price lower than 60K, I am still quite confident about the industry, because I do see that we have a lot of builders, investors, community members who are still trying our best to build and to grow this industry in different ways. So that's the most important thing. And secondly, I would say try to contribute to not only to the community, but try to contribute in this industry, to this industry in your way. You know, maybe a social media post, a like, mm-hmm. Some kind of like offline event participation mm-hmm. could make a difference. And maybe introducing Bitcoin to your friends, to people you know who never ever touches crypto. So that's also the way that we can increase adoption, a crypto adoption rate. And third, for the Israel community members, I know it's kind of like a small community. Everyone knows everyone.
They do, don't they?
They do.
It's like everybody. Yeah, it's the same place. Yeah,
exactly. So that's how I feel in the past 2 days. You know, yeah. I see a similar face, same faces actually at different events.
It's very cohesive.
But also means these people are very active.
Yeah.
Which is good. So I do hope that these same faces, these really active members in Israel community could be the leaders in leading the way of the crypto in Israel in different ways, you know, education, you know, converting new users, growing in and helping in local ecosystem, and also building a more broader picture for the whole Israel community. So I would like to see more like this.
Yeah, I think it's like it's something that we used to have a lot of international visits here up until 23.
Okay.
And I guess this, you know, your visit here is pretty exciting because, you know, there was a war here in the past 2 years and people like other places with conflict around the world tend to not come here. I guess that Brian Armstrong from Coinbase was here about a few months ago, I think last summer. And we didn't have those major visits. So I guess it's exciting that you guys are here. Are we going to see Bybit in Hebrew? Are we going to see localized websites and apps? And
Not yet. But so first of all, the purpose of my visit this time is, first of all, there are several factors. First of all, I'm trying to understand better about the local market, mm-hmm. the local ecosystem, and more importantly, the regulatory framework, which leads to the second purpose of my visit, trying to see whether there's any possibility or opportunity to get a local license, because that's how we evaluate each market when there is a license possible. So we have to do a lot of evaluations in terms of the local market and plus the regulatory framework. And third, to make more friends in Israel.
Of course.
Speaking of like localized website or Hebrew language version of the app, I think that's a thing we have to do once we are fully regulated locally. So yeah, I mean, we still need to evaluate internally about what we should do. Mm-hmm. And we have to do some, we also have need some conversations with regulators directly and indirectly, and then and decide what to do next. So once, if we are regulated in the future, then the Hebrew version of the website and app will definitely be in place. So yeah, stay tuned. I will definitely keep the Israel communities and all the users updated about the progress. But yeah, it's going to take time.
Great. Last question. Take us 5 years into the future with Bitcoin and the crypto ecosystem. How do you think it would be in the next 5 years? What do you perceive?
That's a big question. But I do see, first
of all, people have big questions. This is that's the place for big questions. Okay.
First of all, I do.
We're not going to hold you accountable for that. I promise. It's fine.
First of all, I do see the converge between Web 2 and Web 3.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, what we've been building, not only in fiat infrastructure, like Bybit Pay, Bybit Card, but we're also integrating banking service to Bybit. So users can deposit now US dollars to Bybit, and they can transfer out US dollars just as the same as a traditional bank. And users can, you know, can earn, they can trade, they can invest, they can participate in the pre-IPO, even though the SpaceX IPO is not successful, not only for us, but also for Binance and other exchanges. Mm-hmm. So they literally can do everything like what they did in traditional finance. So the first trend I can see is clearly in the next 5 years, there will be no gap between Web 2 and Web 3. So we can see a much better integration. And look at Robinhood, you know, the traditional Web 2 joint platform. They're also integrating crypto into their platform. So you will see a lot of similarities moving forward between these, you know, traditional and Web 3 platforms. That's for sure. And secondly, we will see a lot of AI getting involved. This is just the start. I think I talked about, you know, the possibility of KYA during the breakfast meeting with Collider. So I do firmly believe that AI will be playing a more and more important role moving forward. So even local regulators in Dubai, like ADGM, like DFC, they have started the conversation and work on discussing about the regulatory framework for AI, which is really forward thinking. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I do hope like local regulators in Israel could also follow up. So with the clear regulation, we will definitely see, I mean, the KYA coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, we have to learn more about how to use AI in a smart way, so that it can help us make better decisions, process the vast majority of information in a faster way, and to manage your financial portfolio in a better way.
Yeah, we actually had a few episodes ago, we had Taraya and sort of an agent-based trading system, which is kind of nice. I saw that this is some sort of a trend where you let your agents trade on your behalf, but it seems a bit tricky,
scary.
Isn't it? Yeah,
I do see, because I talk to different users and some of them do have this concern. Well, they don't have the full trust on AI, and also I think there are some
sorry
experiments.
It's like, It's like, sorry, I lost all your money. I won't do it again.
There are some experience saying AI is losing money.
Yeah.
But still, think about it. There are so much information out there that you have to process.
Of course.
Macro level, micro level, and also different noises. As a human brain, we cannot process all this information at the same time. And it's so hard. So I think with AI, it can help us sort out what are the major ones that you have to consider. What are the noises that you can ignore, right? And then based on this information, I think human beings will be able to better make the decision. And secondly, AI, they have the ability to access to the data that we cannot access to.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like, I won't say it's insider information, but more in-depth analysis and in-depth data that could also give us, you know, totally different view. And third, I haven't done this test, but I really want to do it actually. Because Bybit has the AI agent sub-account now,
mm-hmm.
and we can integrate different AI agents to the sub-account and ask them to trade for us. The limit now is $5,000 only. So I really want to give it a try by comparing different types of AI agents for a period of maybe like a week and see which one wins. No, AI agents versus human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to do this test. I think some AI does have its own advantages. So I would definitely, you know, see this result. And also that means if people are still not confident about AI agents, that means there's still a long way to go for tech people, product people, to further develop it, refine it, and make AI more usable, more efficient in our financial decision making. But I do see that trend coming. And the last part is I would say we can expect a higher percent in terms of crypto adoption. So I think maybe 5 years later, we might see, you know, your grandmother buying Bitcoin for her grandson and leave the Bitcoin, you know, as the heritage. It will happen with more builders, with everyone working so hard in his or her way to build this industry. I firmly believe that's going to happen.
Yeah, because in Israel, we saw some of our data shows that 26.8% of Israelis hold or held crypto, which is 1.5 million people.
You know,
it's a small place.
That's very amazing because I saw the data the worldwide. It's just about slightly less than 8%. So 26.8, that's incredible.
It's major.
But which also means crypto education is doing so well in Israel.
Dirk Dai, on this note, thank you very much for being here at Anshei HaBitcoin, at the Bitcoin People podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation. And I really enjoy the conversation with you and also with the other community members in Israel. I wish that I could come back later for more visits, especially at a personal level, because this visit has been really intense, fully packed with back-to-back business meetings. I don't even have the time to walk.
To see the sights.
No time.
No time to see the sights. And in Tel Aviv in the summer is just great. So
yeah,
you'll have to come again.
I will. I know there's a big AI event coming up in this October.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could come back because I'm also a big AI fan. And I would see how advanced AI technology here is now is in Israel.
Yeah.
Because I know like Israel is really leading in technology innovation. So I really want to see some really cool applications of AI not just like for crypto, in different industries.
Right. So it's a beginning of a beautiful friendship. And I hope, and I do invite you again to this podcast. I think your visit was great, and I was at some of the events and I saw that whole enthusiasm around this visit. So I truly welcome you to Israel, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, my great honor. I mean, so this is the last day of my visit, and I really wish that this visit could first of all increase the confidence of the local communities in crypto. And also, secondly, show them what Bybit is doing and what we're trying to build in the future. And third, to invite all the community members to build together with us and to grow the community by inviting more new users, and also try to further increase the crypto adoption in Israel.
Of course. We'll add a link to your communities in the episode itself. And I'd love to have you here again. Thank you again. אנשי הביטקוין, פודקאסט איגוד הביטקוין הישראלי, thank you for being with us. אנחנו בכל אפליקציות הפודקאסטים, כמו שאתם יודעים, חזרנו בחזרה לעברית, ועושים המון 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 אירועים. אז תודה רבה, thank you very much, תודה רבה, which means thank you very much, Derek Dai, regional head of MENA at Bybit. Thank you very much.
My honor.